What's up, man?
It's Connect Nessie.
Squeeze bench press.
Hey, what's up, Brian? How are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Good, 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 good. What's going on? How are things in Arkansas?
Man, things are great. For me personally and Cora, everything's going great. We're like surging in COVID cases.
Yeah. I mean, everywhere is. I mean, LA, we're the highest we've been since this whole thing has started. LA's nuts, you know?
I know we have some big cities and you do too, but for as spread out as we are, we had a few, we're still very, have some very rural areas, but we had some 3,000 a day cases that wow. Have been the highest numbers. I thought that was high as well. I mean, that's the highest numbers we've seen the whole time. But, Cora had it. My parents have it right now, but they're doing okay.
Good. Glad to hear.
I'm sure you do too. I mean, I know so many people that have had it. I've been around people that had it and didn't get it.
Maybe
I had it, was asymptomatic. It's so wild.
I've been the same way. We've had a lot of people have it here. Two of my friends passed away from it. One of them was a guy that I took care of. I was kind of a caretaker for. He's in a wheelchair and lived alone. And so I was one of his caretakers. And so I would go over every night and put him in bed and hang out with him, put him in bed and whatnot. And anyways, he ended up being positive. And when he ended up being positive, his home nurse, who used to come during the day, the company stopped sending their nurse. So he had no nurse coming. And so I would go in and I would get him out of bed. I'd clean him up, get him out of bed, get him in his wheelchair. And finally, when he started to show a few more symptoms, I was like, hey, man, like, because he lived alone, right? I said, we got to get you to the VA. I'm going to get you to the VA because if this starts to go south, it can go really south on, you know, and you live alone. So I ended up taking him to the VA. They admitted him. He ended up passing away in the hospital, you know. But I've never had it that I know of. You know what I mean? Like, and I've never shown any symptoms. I've never, so I don't know, man. It's really weird.
It is. It's which I guess all many viruses are. I mean, I'm not a virologist or
right.
Whatever right. That other one, epidemiologist.
Yeah.
I always botch the pronunciation of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, it is, it just really blows my mind that Cora had it and I didn't get it. And I was quarantined with her, took care of her. I mean, cause she had all the symptoms.
Right.
And one of the weirdest symptoms that I thought was she had this like rash on the insides of her fingers.
Really?
Hey, yeah. I was on top of everything else, loss of taste and smell is also odd.
Yeah.
And that lingered for like a month.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. It's, but I did not get it. And then I was exposed one other time and got a negative test and didn't get it then either. So it's kind of, that's what blows my mind. Like maybe I was an asymptomatic carrier, which is also another mind blowing thing about it.
Right. Maybe. Do you know your blood type? What's your blood type?
I don't know. Yeah. I've been getting, I do blood every 6 months now I saw your comment on my 48-year-old post.
Oh yeah.
I get wellness checkups now, but
right.
Next time I have no idea what my blood type is. I know Cora's, she's O, type O.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But
she's so, Omega, huh?
Okay. She's the one that they said is not supposed to be hit as hard. And she was.
Yeah. I'm O positive.
Okay.
I'm O positive. And like I said, I've been around it. I've been around it quite a bit and I've never one of two things, either, you know, they've done some studies and they've traced cases of it, as early as I want to say, October, November of 2019 here in LA. Mm. they've gone back and they've checked blood, donated blood from like the Red Cross, and they found antibodies and what's it called. So they know that people as early as around October, November, 2019 have had it. I know that I was sick in December, and it was really weird. It wasn't like anything, crazy, but I was down for about 3 weeks, man. Like just kind of had the crud, man. Like with just low energy, and I finally shook it. So like one of two things, either my blood type is the resistant type, or I may have had it back then. I don't know. I haven't done an antibody test, but, me and my partner here at the gym, her and I, we get tested regularly. About every 2 weeks we get tested, and we've never had a positive test. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, it's real. Don't get me wrong. I know it's real, man. And I know people have it. And like I said, I've had two friends that pass away from it, but it's just really strange, man. It's kind of, you know, and, it's interesting if we're ever going to get back to normal, you know, even with the vaccine, I don't know if we're ever going to get back to normal. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, Go ahead.
Sorry. How has it affected business for you? You guys doing okay?
Yeah, we really are. That was one thing I was going to we'll chat about that right now. Like for us, we initially we had like maybe 40 freezes on memberships, maybe even 50. Yeah. Like there was a big wave of freezes. We were closed from March 16th until May 4th entirely.
Okay. Like, right.
I mean, there might have been some secret open mats, you know.
Right, right.
Just a couple, right? But you know, then we opened back up. Pretty much every single person turned their membership back on, right? And then we actually have been surging since then, because 2 weeks before the pandemic hit, we moved to twice the size location.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're still not even running the schedule that we want to be running.
Right, right.
Entirely. We were going to offer – we're getting there, right?
Right.
But we also are being somewhat cautious with how many people we have in the coming and going and stuff, right?
Cause sure.
Classes at once pretty much all evening. So, but you know, so things have been surging since we reopened, in terms of people coming in, training, enrollments of new memberships and stuff like that. So everything with that is just been in a positive direction. We actually have more members than ever,
right.
By a lot. Yoga really is probably quadrupled for us since we moved.
Nice. Nice. So
we were doing that a couple of years before we moved, and now we have it right. Like its own room and do hot yoga. And it's been... And then we closed for a week when Cora had COVID, and 10 days, something like that. I mean, she got it on like a Thursday, so we closed there. And I think we reopened on the following Tuesday, the week, and then that next. So, but I mean, other than just those two little hiccups of like the bad timing of closing after we moved and then closing for another week. But I mean, almost all the instructors have had it.
Right.
I mean, I haven't had it. One other instructor I know hasn't had it, that's here every day. And hopefully we don't get it. And hopefully even if I do get it, we don't have to, unless there's a big exposure, we don't have to close down. We're going to be closed until just after the new year.
Right.
After tomorrow. So.
Right.
Yeah, give us a little time.
Well, sounds like you guys are doing good. You're making it. So that's always a good thing. You know, it's been a crazy year.
How's it affected you? Are you still in Hollywood? Yeah.
I'm not. We moved out of Hollywood last year. We opened at our new location in October of last year.
Okay.
So we were October, November, December, January, February. So we were open, 5 months when we got shut down?
Ooh.
October. Let's see. We opened October 1st. So October, November, December, January, February. Yeah. So we were open. We were open 5 months. We got shut down. I mean, so technically, we've been closed, shut down longer than we were actually open, you know? Mm-hmm. So we got shut down in March. And then, we reopened probably around May, probably around the same time you did. And then they shut us down again, but we just decided to stay open, man. So we've, like every jiu-jitsu academy here in Los Angeles, the majority of us, our front windows are all closed up. We bring everybody through the back door, and we've been kind of playing that game for a while. Maybe a couple months ago, about two months ago, just like you guys, we had a huge surge of new students, man. People were calling like crazy, you know? And I kept telling our girl here who helps out, I kept telling her, I said, hey, be real careful. You like kind of vet them as much as you can if they're calling, asking if we're open, you know, and she did a great job. And we, man, we got a ton of new members over the last couple months. We're not back up to where we were originally, but we're doing well. And then this last wave, things have kind of slowed down for us a little bit. We still have all the members. Nobody's quit. Nobody's frozen their accounts or anything like that. They just haven't been showing up for class, you know, just kind of, and it may be the holidays, you know, that always kind of gets like that about around the holidays. But when we've had this last big surge, we noticed that people started, you know, slowing down. We still offer, people the opportunity to Zoom in. And so, so like over these last couple of weeks, a lot of people have been Zooming in to watch class instead of coming in to participate. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, man, I've talked about this a little bit with people in passing, but I think we're all going to, on the other side of this, are going to make some cool evolutions in how we do things. I know I am with how, like, I teach at a college now. Right. And with what I'm going to leverage my studio here, there's like a separate suite, I guess you could say, off of the new gym. That's where our podcast studio is at, right?
Right. Awesome. But,
I've been, ever since we closed down last March, I've been sort of leveraging like, okay, the digital need is never going to go away. You know, I've got
to
create more stuff in for my podcast. How can I use that for my history classes I teach at the university? And can I have a podcast with Mark Bradford and then put it up and then my students, right. are, you know, it's yeah, all yeah. connected.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I think that that's like it is a silver lining. I think that we're going to be able to meet some demands of like, hey, you know, like, do you want to do as I've done several Zoom private lessons with Jack Toffer since
really?
The pandemic began, you know, and it's like, that's not anything we had ever done before.
Right, right.
And then now I'm like, I wonder who else offers digital private lessons, you know?
Right,
that's me as a black belt in another state. Like, is that something?
Sure.
That is going to be marketable. I talked with Sambo Steve, and he was like, there's no way. I would never do that. You know, and I was
right.
But there's that perspective too. And he's like, and his reasoning was on point. He's like, I need to be able to, like, do the technique. You feel that, you know, kind of approach. So,
you know, the interesting thing is, but that's him. And there's so many people in this world. And we all learn differently, right? And I will tell you, we have one girl here that zoomed in religiously. She zoomed in, like, she was doing really good. And then she's a school teacher. So when we shut down, she was like, well, I'm just gonna zoom in. I'm gonna try to limit my contact with people. So she would zoom in religiously. And I would watch her on Zoom. I would watch her with her dummy. She had a dummy, and I would watch her do her techniques, and I'd correct what I could. And then when things started to ease up, she came back in here and she was training, and I was watching her during rolling, and I watched her hit a couple really nice arm bars and arm bar triangle combinations. And I was like, holy crap, man. Like, that looks really good. Like, what have you, you know? And she said, man, just off of Zoom. So we all learn differently, man. And we can all excel. I mean, that she found that works really well for her. And she can't be the only one out there, right? There's a lot of other people out there just like her. So
yeah, I mean, it's a combo thing. I think about like the multiple intelligences model all the time, if you're familiar with that, of like some people are going to benefit solely for their learning style by like that feel and touch. Maybe that Sambo Steve is about it, you know?
Yeah.
For me, it's this right here. Like, hey, whoa, I see what you're showing there. We're having a conversation about it. You're explaining it to me. I'm a very like see and hear kind of learner, right? An audio.
Right, sure.
Some people, you could just say it like in a very philosophical, reasonable way, rational learning.
Right.
Now, I'm a little bit on that side too, I think. But the jujitsu is all those, all of
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think that's been the, probably one of the neatest things over the years that I've been teaching, right, is being to being able to identify what type of learner my student is. And then being able to communicate to them the things I need them to do. Right. I've always been lucky. I've always been very visual, so I can watch somebody do a technique and I can go right out there and replicate it or imitate them. And I've been very visual. And so I've always been lucky that way, but I know that there are a lot of students out there that aren't. It's, and you can identify them right off the bat because you do the move and you demonstrate it three or four times. You ask everybody if they have it, everybody says yes. And then you go out there and they're grabbing the wrong arm. They're doing, you're like, dude, were you even watching me? And then you go, wait a second, this guy is obviously not a visual learner. You know what I mean? So we got to go back and move him around a little bit. He's probably more kinesthetic, move him around, you know, take his hand, put it here, whatnot. And he's got to feel it for himself. But that's been one of the joys, if you will, of teaching over the years, is understanding that and being able to identify that in my students. And and I've always kind of prided myself on being able to identify it and then like I said, communicate it to them in a way they understand it. So, you know.
Yeah. Here's a funny full circle story on that. So like, and I told John and a couple of the guys here at the gym that have trained with your seminar when you came down. So we've been doing butterfly guard, right?
Right.
So this will be a testament to my learning style again, right? So you were doing a private lesson with John Brashear, this guy just got promoted to black belt recently, actually.
Right.
And you were showing him a butterfly sweep. Right. But you were like, you were the import of this one detail for us that I've now been teaching when we've been doing this butterfly Marcelo style techniques and stuff about like when you go for the butterfly sweep, using the the opposite leg, like digging your toe into the mat.
Oh, yeah.
Toe. Like we imported that. But here's where like John was like, oh, I forgot. Yeah, that's where I got that. Because I told him, I was like, hey, I'm doing a podcast with Mark. He's the guy who told us how to do that for the first time. But I saw you tell John that. I was sitting over to the side. You did like three privates with some of my students, like the day after the seminar before you went back to the airport or something. And I was just watching. And you're like, yeah, you know, this, when they stand up and they're resisting, you use that toe in the mat and that'll turn you down. I was like, but you know, it was just one of those moments, but it was just me seeing you illustrated on him a couple of times. It's like on the edge of the mat. I don't even think I had a gi on. Yeah. You together out there working. And I was like that, but that was my learning style. And actually I was like, oh, wow. I just saw it do that. Wow. It's mine now. Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Good times, man. That was, you know, when you taught that seminar, I believe you were talking about how you had just trained with Dave Kama. Is that correct?
Maybe. God, is that long ago? Because I haven't seen. Well, I saw Dave not too long ago, but yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I may have just trained with Dave. Yeah.
Was it like your first time training with him? Have you trained with him a little bit over the years?
No. So here's the funny thing about Dave, man. I love Dave. I love Dave to death. We don't see each other as much as I would like. I need to keep in contact with him. But like everybody else that does jiu-jitsu, I was always intrigued with Hickson, right? Because, you know, the myth of Hickson Gracie. I was always intrigued with Hickson. And if you ever watch him fight, or if you've ever seen him grapple, you obviously know that the guy is super, super talented. And so I've always been intrigued with Hickson. And so I just moved back out here to LA. And I was like, well, who are the Hickson black belts out here? Like, who can I work with? Who can I? I obviously knew of Henry. Henry was out at Dynamics over by Santa Monica, over on Santa Monica Boulevard. And but he was really busy, had Dynamics and was really busy and whatnot. And so I started looking and then I found out about Dave. And then on a forum somewhere, somebody said like, oh yeah, he teaches like at a tennis club, you know, down in Laguna Niguel somewhere, you know? And I'm like, man, well, who is this dude? He's teaching out of like this tennis club, you know, this extra room at a tennis club. Somehow, I don't remember how it happened, but somehow I got a hold of his telephone number, you know? So I called him and I said, hey, is this a Dave Kama? And he said, yeah, it is, you know? And I told him, hey, I've been trying to track you down. I'm interested in doing a private with you. The funny thing is Dave is so down to earth. Like he was genuinely surprised that I knew who he was. Right. Yeah. Like he was like, really? Like he was genuinely just like surprised that I knew who he was. And I said, you know what? I'm interested in doing a private with you. And he said, well, what belt are you? And I said, well, I'm a black belt. And he was like, dude, you don't need to do a private with me. He was like, if you're a black belt, you don't need to do a private with me. And I go, no, but I really want to, you know? And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He goes, me and a couple of guys train out of my backyard on Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock. Here's my address. And if you want to come train, come down and train. So I was like, man, really? So I started going down there on Saturday mornings and training with him and his guys for a little while. And that's how I met. But he was like super down to earth dude, like just like I said, totally blown away that I knew who he was and that I even wanted to do a private with him, you know. And then training with Dave, and then we trained together, and then he showed me a bunch of stuff. After we would train, he would always, you know, stop and show me some stuff or go over some concepts with me. That was always really cool, you know? And so, I appreciated the time that I went out there and trained with him. Like I said, it's just gotten to the point now that I don't, we just don't see each other enough. And so, you know,
have you trained at Takesend a few times over the years?
I have not. I've never, I've been to two of his seminars. I've been to two of his seminars. Yeah. But I've never trained with him personally. Like I missed out for a while. He was teaching down here on Wednesdays at Crohn's, you know, the Wednesday mornings. And I meant to go. I just never got around to it. I mean, you know, but running your own school, you're always so busy, man. It's hard for, I mean, I'm here now. It's hard to get away from it. You know what I mean?
So. I mean, I'm technically at my school too.
Yeah. Right.
So right, yeah, so. Yeah, totally. Same with me. A couple of seminars, but I just like, I remember that why I bring up you training with Dave is because like, I mean, those techniques that like got us onto this conversation, like that, the Hickson's approach to jiu-jitsu, which, you know, Jack has trained a lot with Hickson over the years, trained with him at his house, tons of seminars, did classes at Crohn's. And I've trained a ton with Jack. He's done like 5 seminars at my gym. I've trained with him going to California a time or two. But it's a special type of jiu-jitsu that like, after I trained at Hickson for the first time, like maybe 3 years after you came in, I was like, whoa, wow.
Right.
Like, it was just this special flavor, man, you know?
Right.
It really blew me away. I was so inspired. I mean, I was like a 2-stripe brown belt or something. But it just, things that like, that we were doing were the most white belt things ever.
Things, yeah. Yeah.
What you were kind of saying about, you're like, this is the stuff that you know, you learned as a white belt, but you've been doing it wrong the whole time was kind of the point you're making. But I mean, they like really like hip throws, like Hickson did a whole bunch of stuff from like that. Some of the Gracie stuff might call it the T position. I think that's what people, where you just get into the side. Like he blew my mind with that. I was testing for my judo black belt like a few months after that. And I was just like, oh, I just learned how to do a hip throw. Wow. Amazing. Like, I've been doing judo extensively for like 6-7 years, competed a couple of times, and it's still just like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing about that is everything comes full circle, you know? So I've been doing jiu-jitsu now for over 20 years, started in my 20s, and now I'm 48, right? And you go through phases, and everything goes full circle. When people ask me now about my jiu-jitsu, like when they watch me roll, my students watch me roll here, they ask me about my jiu-jitsu, like my game is very, very, it's a white belt game of jiu-jitsu, man. I play a white belt game of jujitsu, and I'm just a little better at it now than I was, you know. But yeah, it's just a very, very white belt game of jujitsu. Like, you know, I go from, if I'm in somebody's guard, and obviously my first goal is to break their guard open, and then I step over and I put myself in half guard. And then I control and stay safe and half guard, keep the pressure until I can pass their guard. But it's a very, very, very basic game. And the reason why that's happened is because as I've gotten older, you do this long enough, like you train, you teach long enough, you know, every year you get older, but your students stay the same age, right? So every year you get older, your students stay the same age. And so as I've gotten older, you know, I'm not as strong as I used to be. I'm not as fast as I used to be. I'm not as athletic as I used to be. And then I realized that fundamentals, like basic jujitsu, is what rules the day as you get older. It's fun when you're still younger and you have the athleticism, the strength and everything else. It's fun to do the great stuff, the crazy stuff, right? You know, the standing guard passes, the barambolos, it's fun. That's all great. But man, once you turn, you know, once you get in your 40s, man, trying to invert isn't as easy as it used to be. And so, you know, so you start throwing those things out the window. And then you have to sit there and assess. So one day you do a self-assessment and say, okay, what am I still capable of doing? Freaking basics, man. Basics. That's what I'm still capable of doing. And yeah, so it all comes full circle, man.
So tell us, man, where did it all begin? How did you get into martial arts? When did you start training?
I've always been like a martial arts nerd, right? Like I started Okinawan karate when I was like 6 years old, you know? And so, you know, I did the kids martial arts stuff. So martial arts has always been close to me, you know? Even when I joined the military, I went off, I joined the military. I tried to train anywhere that I could. So like when I was down at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, I found a Hapkido place. So I did Hapkido. I just took whatever there was, whatever I could get my hands on. And then finally, when I settled in Albuquerque, I wanted to get serious about martial arts again. And I found Greg Jackson's gym. It was just called Jackson's Sky Jiu-Jitsu at the time. And it was just a little gym off San Mateo place, probably about 800 square feet. I went in there one day. Well, I take that back. Let's rewind a second. One of the guys I was working with is an old boxer and boxing trainer. So I started boxing with him. But I knew about jiu-jitsu and I wanted to learn grappling. There was just nowhere to learn at the time. And then one day I found Jackson's, and I went in there and saw these guys grappling. And so I got on the mat with them and got worked over quite a bit. And I said, man, this is the place for me. Like I gotta train here. And Greg is just an amazing coach and just the nicest person you could ever meet. And so that's where I started my grappling, was under Greg Jackson.
How long did you train at Jackson's? How many years?
I was with him about, I was probably with him probably 3 years, I guess. About three years, I guess. And then that's where I met Alberto Crane. I was training at Jackson's, and then I actually got sent out here to LA to go to the Gracie Academy here in Torrance to go through one of their programs. So work paid for me to go through one of their programs. So I came out here, spent a couple weeks out here in Torrance with Horian, and they in our class, like Horian could tell that I had done something, like I knew a little bit of grappling. And so he invited me to his night classes, his jiu-jitsu classes. So that was the first time I ever did jiu-jitsu in a gi, was at the original Torrance Academy down here. Whoa. So he put me in a gi. He put me in a gi, and man, I loved it. You know, I loved it. Then I got back to Albuquerque, and there was no place to train jiu-jitsu there. But Alberto Crane started coming in to train at Jackson's for his MMA fights. And somebody said, hey, like that's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, man. Like he lives up in Santa Fe, he just opened an academy, you know, he used to live in Brazil. And so I hit up Alberto and he said, yeah, come up Saturday mornings, train with me. And so, so I started doing both, driving up to Santa Fe, training at Jackson's, driving up to Santa Fe. And then decided to make the full-time switch to jiu-jitsu. Right. So made the full-time switch and started training under Alberto full-time. So
yeah. How far is it from Albuquerque to Santa Fe? Drive time.
About an hour.
Yeah, that's I knew it was somewhat close proximity. So like yeah. from here to Fort Smith, Arkansas. Right. That's about an hour for me to get to Fort Smith. Which you yeah. owned a gym in Fort Smith at one time. Is that when yeah. did that when was that era?
2006. I was teaching out of a small karate dojo there in 2006, and I officially opened my gym in 2007.
I started off splitting rent, you know, teaching at a karate dojo, and then ended up getting a ton of students and eventually opening my first location.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a purple belt at the time. And, I had just moved over to Fort Smith, and, I called back to Alberto and said, man, there's no place to train here, man. You know, no, I like jiu-jitsu, like, you know, the closest jiu-jitsu was either Oklahoma City West or East was Little Rock, but they're both 3 hours away from Fort Smith, you know? So I was like, man, there's really nowhere to train here. And Alberto, you know, Alberto was always very encouraging. He said, look, man, like you're a purple belt. Like you can train your own partners, man. You know, you can train people, you can teach people. So I started teaching people and then I decided to open up a school and that's how I started in Fort Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I was a purple belt when you taught that seminar, and had a school. I mean, we probably had over 100 students at the time, and all of our young kids and everything. But So you were in Fort Smith. This like is a part. Like, is it your military career that brought you to Fort Smith?
No, it wasn't. I worked for the government. And so I was doing some work out on Fort Chaffee out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
In the government career. Yes. I guess it's the, yeah. Cause I didn't know, you know, I like missed out on when you were here. I mean, that's like, what years did you say that you had your Fort Smith gym open?
2006, end of 2006, 2007, 8, 9, 10. I guess I left in 2010, 2011, somewhere around there.
That's right. Yeah. I was like getting going with my first location, you know, like 2012 is when I made that transition and opened my own club. But, you know, I've been training with Caleb from about 06, about what time, but you know, I just heard about you by the time I was getting to be like a blue belt and stuff. And then, I don't even remember. Like, I feel like I'd met you. Oh yeah. I guess you taught at the black belt conference that Caleb
I did. Yeah. 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 That might have been the first one, I think.
Those are always fun, man. That was, I remember you showing like a deep half detail that we were reminiscing about too, that the one where you don't get put in the triangle where you come back up on that sweep.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We had like a side conversation about that, like me and you and Nate Murdoch. And I can't remember, I guess, you know, Jeff Woods might've been there. He was the one of the guys here that was at that event. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy how that's grown, right?
It is like jiu-jitsu,
crazy how that's grown.
It is mind-blowing because you know, when I was a blue belt, I mean, I like to say this sometimes, like Caleb Plank used to be the only blue belt I knew, like, but he was, dude.
right.
It was like, it used to be kind of like exotic, you know, I mean, right. I guess to some people it still is, but like I'm talking in the state, like there wasn't. And then it's been, now I remember there were 5 total black belts in Arkansas, like when I got my blue belt, and now like there's a countless number, like there's over 50, you know, I mean, that's not even a lot, but I would estimate that we're probably close to 100 now. Just like, I mean, I'm like, oh, this gym has like, Westside has a ton. We promoted our first 5 and people that have been with me this whole time since I first got going, you know, that stuck it out, that have been around. So, or even before, like, because, like, several of them were with me all the way back at the karate gym.
Right. Wow.
Still here, man. So, yeah, that's awesome, man. So did you guys have any like craziness get close to you other than COVID with like riots, protests, broken glass? I know that 110th Planet location got burned to the ground. Was that, did you see anything like that, or fires, anything like that come close to you?
I mean, they were here in Los Angeles for sure, but close is a LA is really weird. Close is a strange term, right? Because here in LA, like we measure distance by time, not by actual distance, you know? So there was some stuff relatively close, but nothing that put our gym or anything in any danger, you know? This was a little different than the first riot. See, I was here in LA during the first riots, you know? And in my opinion, these riots here were nowhere near as bad as it was in 92. The big difference is, the looting and the rioting here, just this past year took place in the more affluent parts of Los Angeles. So people came out of where they lived and went to the nicer areas, to, you know, Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, to loot and riot and all that stuff, where back in 92, it was happening in the neighborhoods, the troubled neighborhoods themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm here in like, LA has changed too. LA has changed since 92. In 92, LA was, people were flocking out of LA because inside the city was so bad. There wasn't a neighborhood in LA that wasn't crime ridden back in 92. It's the exact opposite now. LA has become pretty posh in the city. I mean, people live downtown, they work downtown. So LA proper, the city has actually become pretty posh, and it's kind of pushed everybody to the outside. And so so now when I say they came from the outside in to riot in the nicer neighborhoods this time around, whereas before it was just right here in the city. So yeah.
Man, a couple. I mean, Jack did live in Irvine. I think that he lives in LA right now. But he's talking about moving out to like Salt Lake City. He's got family there. So, and that's, you know, I do know some people that have been moving out of California, out of New Jersey, New York. Have you been seeing a lot of that? Like
a lot of people. A good friend of mine, a guy I used to train down here, and I used to see it all the tournaments. But a guy named Greg Hamilton, he's now over in Texas. He got his black belt from Jean Jacques, but he's now over with Carlos Machado, and so he has a school out there in Dallas, or one of the suburbs of Dallas. He's doing really well out there, but a lot of people are moving out of LA. So we'll see what happens.
So back in the good old days before the pandemic, what was the jiu-jitsu culture like around you? Like what are some things that you think make it special or different? Or, I mean, because for me, it's always been kind of exotic, and
yeah,
I could go on about, well, my
So, Southern California, other than outside of Brazil, Southern California is kind of like the Mecca, right? It is. And there's so many schools out here. And again, prior to this pandemic, during the season, the jiu-jitsu season, you know, so starts with usually there's a couple tournaments come January, but the season usually kicks off March with the Pens, you know, and then we run through the summer all the way to Masters Worlds. That was kind of the season. Man, you can compete every weekend down here. There's so many different types of tournaments. Like, you know, we have NABJJF, and then we have, of course, the IBJJF tournaments. And then we had a bunch of smaller productions that were doing some really good things, man, some really awesome sub-only, no time limit, like true sub-only, no time limit tournaments. There was an organization down here, a guy named Sean, he was running an organization down here called Dream, and they would do like the baddest blue belt and the baddest purple belt. And they were lit. They were truly, I had one of my students fighting. I always had students fighting his tournaments, but like the baddest blue belt tournament was truly submission only, no time limit. And so like you would start a match, I kid you not, like you would start a match, watch like 10 minutes of the match, and then say, hey, let's go get something to eat, go out, sit down, go to lunch, come back, and those guys would still be fighting. I mean, matches would go an hour and 20 minutes, like just absolutely nuts. But the guys that won those tournaments, like that's a true test, man. Like that's a true test.
Yeah.
Is getting in there in a true no submission, or I'm sorry, no time limit sub only, winning a no time limit sub only tournament is a true test of your skill. That's for sure.
Yeah. Man, you guys can just go get acai bowls anytime you want in California.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All over. All over. My professor, Alberto Crane, man, he owns a great, him and his wife have Acai Jungle Cafe in Burbank. It's attached to their gym, and they have wonderful food, man. Their acai bowls are amazing and wonderful food. They have a wonderful menu and a little cafe. And yeah, so you can get acai just about anywhere here.
Yeah, amazing. So,
yeah.
Yeah, man, it is that is a great way to describe it. It is kind of the Mecca. It's where Worlds and Pans have been, you know, and some great gyms like what you've got, the Mendez brothers. Is it Gal Val's in San Diego? But I mean,
he's still in San Diego. It's all still, yeah. You know, San Diego isn't too far away, and you know, it's not. At any of the tournaments here, it's not uncommon to see, you know, Otto's guys come up from San Diego. And then, of course, AOJ, you know, Mendez Brothers over there in Costa Mesa. Everybody, Cobrinha right down the road here on Wilshire.
Yeah.
Humul de Bahal right over here in the valley. And so some of the top gyms and top players are all out here, you know. And it's kind of cool because you get to see them compete at every level. You know, we get to see them. We get to see them in the smaller tournaments when they're some of the competitors that are at the smaller tournaments when they're prepping for the Pans or prepping for Worlds, you know. So it's for the jiu-jitsu guy, like it doesn't get a whole lot better, you know, than living in Southern California.
Last time I was in that area for Worlds, I went and trained at Shootbox Long Beach. The owner, Garrison, he had taught a seminar at Caleb's because his in-laws live in Northwest Arkansas. Like they had
recognized no kidding
or something. Yeah. So like he was super nice. I learned a lot from him. I still use some techniques I learned at that seminar today and teach, you know. So I hit him up, and they had a black belt there that was a guy that Kluber or Clubber was that guy's coach. Like he had that guy's patch on. I remember, I can't remember his name though, but he was teaching
clever Luciano.
Yes
he was a clever guy. Okay. Yeah.
And I want to say his name was like Marcelo or something, but I could be wrong. I would have to look back into it, but I did his class, and there rolled Eric Ingram and I were together. We were walking distance with our Airbnb. So we went in there, we rolled, kind of trained, but there was people there from all over.
Like, all over, yeah.
We're just here, you know, your hotel, and you sit in the hot tub or the pool. Like people are in from all over, and they go train at these gyms. I mean, we went and trained at your gym one time when we were, a bunch of us were in town.
Yeah, it's not uncommon, especially around the big, you know, around the time of the big tournaments, to get calls and say, hey, we're just in town for Pans, but we're looking for a place to roll and warm up a little bit. You know, do you mind if we jump in a class or come train? Like, yeah, come on down, man. So it's pretty cool in that aspect, too. We got tons of visitors out here from all over. So, yeah.
So, you know, there is, like, I have to think about all the people we just named, Cobrinha, the Mendez, all that, right? And everything else, there's a lot of jiu-jitsu, a lot of academies, a lot of gyms, a lot of people that are, I'm sure, that are, you know, not these well-known names that have very successful gyms.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, of course.
So in that market where you're at with all this, yeah. like what are some things that, about what how you do things, like your culture, the way your academy is, that make you guys able to do things like survive COVID and grow and et cetera?
Yeah. You know, there are a couple different things. I know when I decided to punch out, when I decided to leave the government and come here to LA, and, you know, all my buddies and everybody's asked me, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to go teach jiu-jitsu full time. And they're like, dude, you're going to go open up a school in Los Angeles? Like, are you kidding me? Cause I mean, again, everybody's out here, you know? And I said, yeah, I mean, but I really wanted to do it. So I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a go and we'll see what happens. And you come out here and you learn, there's a couple things. One of the blessings out here is, again, like I said, we measure distance by time, not by actual distance. And so because it is so difficult to get around here, there's enough room for all of us. You know what I mean? So you may move to LA with the intention. So you may move to the city of Los Angeles, right? Like if you don't know Los Angeles area, if you don't know the LA area, you go, you know, I'm going to move to LA and I'm going to train with the Mendez brothers. And then, so you jump on a plane, you move here to LA, you get settled in and you look on a map and you go, oh, Costa Mesa is only 20 miles away. That's nothing. 20 miles in Arkansas is what? You get 20 miles in 15 minutes, right?
15 minutes, dude. But it's
going to take you 2.5 hours here. You know what I mean? And so it may be great. It may be great to, what's it called? It may be great to, you know, your first couple times you go down there and you think, man, this is awesome. But come 2 months down the road, 3 months down the road, you start looking for a place to closer to home, you know? And so that works in our favor. That works in my favor here. But I think also the other thing too, is understanding, like knowing your audience and understanding your crowd and carving out your niche. And what I mean by that is, like, I'm surrounded. Cobrinha is not even 10 minutes down the road from me. I mean, that's literally 10 minutes down the road from me. My professor Alberto is maybe about half an hour from me. Who else is that? I mean, there's just a bunch of people around here. Hollywood BJJ is not too far. They're about 15 minutes from me. And so carving out your niche. And so, like, if people come in here, if I get a purple belt that comes in here, man, and let's say he just moved here and he's a purple belt and he really wants to be a great competitor, right? He wants to be world champion. I have no problem saying, hey, buddy, go right down the road. Cobrinha is right down the road, man. He's got a great school. The guy's going to make you purple belt world champion. Go right. I have no problem doing that. I, as far as carving out my niche, I feel like I can, and I think my students here will agree. I can take you from knowing zero jiu-jitsu to being a really, really solid purple belt. And I'm fine with that. I am absolutely fine with that. And once you make purple belt, if it's in your heart and you say, hey, man, I want to be a world champion, I want to be pan champion, I want to be world champion, I have no problem saying, hey, man, go down to Cobrinha, go down to Alberto's, go down to whatever. Because that's where you're going to find the level of training partners that you're going to need to reach that goal. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But if you're a guy down the road who wants to learn jiu-jitsu for self-defense or get in shape or for whatever reason, have no aspirations of being a world champion, you just want to get in the culture, learn martial arts and whatnot, this is the place to do it, man. This is the place to do it. I'll take you from, again, knowing nothing to being a solid purple. I mean, don't get me wrong. I can take you from knowing nothing to being a solid black belt. You know what I mean? But if you're that competitor, if you're that, I have no problem when I get guys to that level and they want to do the extra, I have no problem saying, hey, this is where you need to go now, you know? And so.
Yeah. Well, and it may be different in Southern California, but I would say for I was saying that while you're talking about like the difference in sport and hobby and self-defense and all the other reasons people to stay in shape, fitness, do people want to do jiu-jitsu? It's like, I would say that you probably, let's say you do encounter that exact scenario you just talked about. It's such a small percentage of people in relation to all of those other demographics of people that are just coming in because, and they want to gain some confidence and defend, be able to defend themselves and be a part of a community, et cetera. You know, I mean, all of the benefits that come with being a part of the jiu-jitsu community. But, you know, most of my members don't compete. I've had 32 students compete at a tournament at an ATF, you know. I was competing at the time. And I would say also I've noted that since I start compete less, I have students competing less.
Right.
It's less a part of like the most obvious culture that we have going, you know. It's like it's still a component. We still do it. It's about like what you do, for sure. So, but yeah, so I got a topic for us to riff on real quick here from Mike Page. So we'll give a shout out to Mikey.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, I just talked to him on the phone right before I sat down with you. But I will say, like, I've been noticing, like, dude, you're staying super active. You said on Facebook not to throw your personal info out there, but you're 48 years old. Mike was like, how's that dude? You know, asking this, how's he still do it? Like, cause you're going rucking, you're riding your bike, like all over California, Southern California, you know, I think I saw you do a 20-mile ride the other day. I mean, you are really active, you know, and how do you continue to find that motivation? You know, so for myself, you know, I'm 15 years down the road.
I have severe ADHD, man. I do. I wasn't diagnosed until I was an adult. I wasn't diagnosed with it until I was 38 years old. I had been active my whole life, right? So, again, when I was young, I did martial arts. I played sports. Then I went in the military, and I was active in the military. Then I left the military and went to work for the government. I was active for the government. And so for 38 years of my life, I had been relatively active, right? I had an outlet for this energy that I had. And then at 38, when I moved back to Albuquerque, I took a desk job in Albuquerque. About 6 months into that desk job, I just couldn't function. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just could not function. And again, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And that led to a little bit of depression. So I ended up going to see a doctor. And then after about 6 months of evaluation, they came back and they said, hey man, like, has anybody ever told you that you have severe ADD, adult ADD? And I said, no, nobody's ever told me that, you know? So they had actually put me on medication for it. So they put me on medication for it. And I remember that was a trip. My first day back at work on medication was like, there was that movie that came out. Limitless. What's that? Limitless. Yes. That's what it felt like. Like, I remember sitting at my desk focused, ready to work and knocking stuff out and thinking, man, is this what it's like to be normal? Cause this is freaking amazing, you know? Eventually I decided to leave that job. And when I did, the doctors decided, well, since we're going back and we're going to be doing jiu-jitsu full time, we can start weaning me off my medication. So I started coming off the medication. I haven't been on any meds since 2013. I think that's it, man. I think it's just, I'm all over the place all the time. Like I'll throw my ruck on my back and I'll ruck 20 miles. I'll ruck from my house out to the beach. And then the next weekend I'll jump on my bike and I'll ride 20, 30 miles and that's it. And then every day I'm here, you know, teaching. And on the mat. So.
Yeah, man, just getting to do your passions is such a great outlet for anything, for anyone, you know what I'm saying? Like it is, Yeah, me teaching history, doing this podcast, the gym, playing guitar, like everything that I've like made my life just kind of all be about. It still gets stressful sometimes, balancing all of it. But man, it is, you know,
it's a blessing, brother. It's a blessing. Don't ever fail to recognize that it's definitely a blessing. You know, I tell this story all the time, but when I was working in an office in Albuquerque, we had a security guard that worked the front gate. Really nice guy, right? Older guy. And his name was Jack. And I used to stop and talk to him every morning and stop and talk to him on my way in. And he'd drink coffee and we'd talk. And then I'd go in the office and I'd do my thing on the way back out. I'd stop and talk to him. Well, then I later found out that he worked for, he was a retired New Mexico State Police guy. And so as he was retired New Mexico State Police, and he had a couple of legendary capers under his belt, you know. So I stopped and I asked him, I said, "Hey, man," I said, "I got to ask you a question, Jack. Like, what are you doing here, man? What are you doing here?" You know? And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "I know you're retired from the state police. So I know you've got a good retirement. Like, what are you doing here working as a security guard?" You know? And he said, he totally changed my way of thinking. He said, "Well, I'll tell you what, Mark," he said, "I come here because, guys like you, every morning you come in, you stop, you talk to me. I have a good conversation with you guys. I like being around you guys." He said, "But, he said, I did retire." He said, "I retired and I had all these plans just like everybody else. I was going to work hard. I was going to save up, stay with New Mexico State Police. So I had a good pension. And when I retired, my wife and I were going to do all these things." So he finally retired from the New Mexico State Police. His wife got sick and passed away. So he had nobody, you know? And he said, "So now I come to work to hang out with you guys." He said, "But we have it all wrong, man." He said, "We work so hard our entire life and we plan on doing these things at the end. And for the most of us, they never pan out." He said, so live life while you're young. And then when you get my age, go find a job, because you can't do anything else. When you get my age, there's nothing else to do. So go find a job." He said, "But until you get my age, live life, man, do what you want, live life." He said, because even at his age, when he's retired, sure, he could travel the world, but he, in the back of his head, he'd always be thinking, "What if I had done this when I was 30 years old instead of 70, you know, how much of a better experience would it have been?" You know, so sure. That was actually the catalyst for me. I had 20 years with the federal government, Brian. I had 20 years with the government. And that was the catalyst for me. I walked in one day and I said, "I'm done." Turned in my 2 weeks notice. I said, "I'm going to go teach jujitsu full time because that's what I want to do. That's what I love to do." So.
Hell yeah. Here we are.
You know, so it's a blessing. Every day you get to do something that you love, something you're passionate about. It's a blessing, man. So.
It is. It certainly is, man. I mean, just like this connection with just how you and I met, like there's so many of those that exist through the martial arts, you know. It's the relationship right. formed, the experiences traveling to compete and so on. They're amazing. Might be froze up a little bit. You still there?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm here. All right, I'm here. You got me, Brian?
Yeah. I think we're caught back a little delay, but I think we're good.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, man. And those relationships that you build, the people that you meet, the relationships you build are also priceless, you know? So the relationship that I've been able to keep with you, guys like you and Caleb, I love Caleb and Mike to death, you know?
Yeah.
So relationships like that are, like I said, they're priceless. So
they are, man. They are. Well, hey, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me. It's been really good talking to you. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. And, man, maybe, I'm sure I will either see you around or maybe we'll do another podcast one day, one way or the other.
Oh, yeah, I plan on getting out there to Arkansas again sometime. You know, my wife's from Oklahoma. And so we need to go back. We need to go back at some point. And
if you ever headed back this way, let me know. Maybe we could sneak a seminar in or something like that. Okay. I'm always down for something impromptu like that. And we've had Flavio Kenup came in and just did this impromptu seminar. We canceled class that night, or just was like, class.
Oh, awesome.
You know, like, just do Avios here. Like, this is what we're doing tonight, you know? Yeah. So if you do find yourself headed this way, or, you know, definitely let me know, because, you know, it'd be great. It'd be great seeing you, catching up, et cetera.
Yeah, awesome. We'll do.
All right, man. Have a great day. Thanks.
Okay, Brian, you take care.
See ya.
Bye-bye now.